Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 104 event, which takes place in Houston, Texas. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we went 2-0 in our premium bets for UFC on Fox 23 to profit 5.875 units overall. We won our 2.5-unit bets on both Jorge Masvidal and Valentina Shevchenko. We also lost our 1-unit free bet on Jeremy Kimball. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 104 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the fight card on Fight Pass is a light heavyweight contest between Daniel Jolly, who is 5-1, and Khalil Rountree, who is 5-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I have been Rountree -190, the comeback on Jolly at +150. Right now, looking over our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it's Rountree -160, the comeback on Jolly at +140. So line margins tighten up a little bit. Some action coming in more towards the dog early on, but there will be two-way action on this fight for sure. And this is an interesting matchup. I mean, both these guys are primarily known for their striking, but that's really not truly the case here. I mean, obviously for Rountree, we know that that's his background. He's a tough finalist. He actually did pretty good, made it to the obviously the tough final and lost to Andrew Sanchez, basically got grounded out and out-wrestled the entire fight there. But that's definitely his kryptonite. Rountree on the feet is a beast. I mean, he's a southpaw. He's got a lot of power. He's got speed. He mixes things up well. He's just a force to be reckoned with on the feet. He's got a tremendous amount of knockout power. So a lot of guys that fight him don't want to stand and bang with him. They want to take him to the ground and basically try to exploit his weakness, which is just that, the ground game. And that's how he lost his last fight against Pedro as well. So Rountree on the feet is going to be tough to deal with, but on the ground, he's definitely beatable. You can control him, and you can obviously submit him as well. So that's what Jolly's going to try to do. Jolly does have a striking background, but if you look and watch how he fights, he's more of a grounder, a ground type of fighter. I mean, he's more of the wrestler, grinder, looks to get on top, has some pretty good ground and pound, has a little bit of submission skill as well, but that's what he wants to do. I mean, on the feet, he's not bad, but honestly, in his last fight as well, he took the fight short notice against Sirkunov, and he was outstruck by Sirkunov even in that fight, and Sirkunov is supposed to be the grappler in that spot. So he eventually got grounded out, pounded out, I should say, until the referee stopped the fight, but Jolly is that type of fighter that, again, he's going to look for takedowns, look to control the fight, and try to get Rountree where he's weak and win the fight that way. So it's a tough fight. I mean, if Jolly does get the fight to the floor, he probably has some success against Rountree. If not, I think Rountree is going to be successful and probably knock Jolly out on the feet. So it all comes down to Rountree's takedown defense and how good it's going to be against Jolly here and how good Jolly's wrestling is going to be. I think Jolly overall as a wrestler is decent, but he's definitely not some guy that's just going to blow you out of the water with his wrestling either. So he's going to probably struggle at times to get Rountree down. So that's why I'm going to slightly lean towards Rountree. I think Rountree is the more devastating striker, the better striker. He just has to be a little careful here and keep the fight upright if he's going to win it. So that's my pick.
Both of these fighters definitely have clear paths to victory. Khalil Rountree, in my opinion, is one of the more talented strikers in the entire light heavyweight division. His big issue is he just is complete garbage on the ground. You saw that in his last fight against Tyson Pedro. I mean, he goes out there, drops Pedro with one of his first good clean strikes, and then Pedro desperation takedown, and then gets him out with a submission in the first round. So he just needs to use that Chuck Liddell style of the wrestling in reverse, keep fights upright, force guys to stand with him, and then he'll probably win most fights. His big issue is he just can't keep fights upright right now. Now, Daniel Jolly, we haven't seen a lot out of him. I mean, he made one fight in the UFC a while ago, and Misha Sirkunov blasted him. And Sirkunov obviously is one of the better talents in the light heavyweight division right now. But that's really all we've seen out of Jolly. He's about the same size as Roundtree, so it's not like anybody's going to be getting a big size or strength advantage here, but Jolly is a little bit more focused on getting fights to the floor. He does have an overall pretty decent ground game. Sirkunov's was just way better, but Jolly definitely does have an idea of what's going on down there. And if he can get Roundtree on the ground, I can definitely see Jolly winning this fight, whether it be a decision, TKO from ground strikes, maybe even a submission. Or he could just, you know, just ride it out and be careful and kind of take the Andrew Sanchez approach. But that being said, if Jolly sticks around on the feet too long, Roundtree will knock him out. Jolly can be knocked out. He got hurt by Sirkunov. And Roundtree definitely has some elite punching power and the ability to put people away. So I think Roundtree is a lot better than he showed so far. I think that he can keep this fight standing. I don't think that Jolly's takedowns are elite. So if Roundtree can keep his distance and not make any huge mistakes, then I think Roundtree does win this fight. I think he gets a knockout. So my pick is going to be Khalil Roundtree. Now moving on to the Fight Pass headliner, we have a welterweight contest between Alex Morano, who is 13-3, and Nico Price, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I'm on Price minus 150 to come back on Morano at plus 110. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is Price minus 120, even money on Morano. So the dog's 10 cents less. There has been two-way action on this fight as well. In fact, at one point or another, flipped to Morano being a slight favorite. Then we're getting some action back on Price. So there's going to be some heavy two-way action around near Pick'em in this fight. And it is that type of fight, honestly. When I first saw Price, even before he made his UFC debut, obviously against Thatch, I wasn't very impressed. I got to be honest with you. I thought that the guy, yeah, he was an undefeated fighter. His record was a little padded. He was definitely dangerous on the feet at times, but a little sloppy. His ground game, I wasn't that impressed with overall. I mean, he was just an okay fighter. I was honestly a little surprised that he got the call up to the UFC. But what he did to Thatch, I mean, I know we know that Thatch does have some issues. Obviously, he's not as good as we all once thought of him being. I'm talking about Thatch as far as being a prospect and future title contender. He's been exploited now since then. So Price comes in there, but still gets a pretty solid win over a UFC level opponent. And he looked a lot better. His striking looked better. His ground game looked really good. I mean, I underestimated him quite a bit. So he looked much better than he did on footage, to be honest with you. So Price, I got to give him credit now. I mean, he's definitely gained some respect, even though that win, I'm sure in most people's mind, isn't going to be as good as it can be because it is against a Thatch that's really not fighting his best right now. But that being said, it's still a UFC debut on short notice over a named opponent. And he came out there and he looked great. So Price is a dangerous fighter wherever the fight takes place, on the feet especially. But he does tend to get a little aggressive and sloppy at times. But again, on the ground, he is a little bit better than I thought. He can get some takedowns. He could definitely win by submission on the ground as well. So you got to be careful in all areas with Price, and Morano included. Morano, to me, is a very solid fighter. He's a warrior. He's definitely a tough out for most people. He's been a nice little run in his own right in the UFC so far. I mean, it's not like they're giving him easy opponents. I mean, he debuted against Noak, and he got a close, controversial type of decision win. But still, Noak isn't exactly the easiest out at times, even though he is getting a little bit past it right now as well. But then he followed up by a solid win over Mutasri. Mutasri is a very dangerous opponent as well. So I think Morano is gaining more confidence. He's always been one of those fighters that he starts off a little slow, but then seems to pick it up, especially as his opponents start to slow down a little bit. Morano's more of those fighters that's going to take his time, patiently wait, and then start kind of putting combos together on the feet when he has to. He is aggressive when he has to as well. So he times that kind of situation really well. He's got a little bit of pop in his punches, so he's got some power. He's got some finishing ability on the ground as well. And I think his ground defense overall, his takedown defense could improve. He does get put on his back, but overall his sub defense is solid as well. And he's pretty tough. I mean, he's hard to knock out. So Morano is not going to go anywhere. I think this is going to be definitely Price's toughest test to date. And I could see Morano pulling this out, honestly, kind of weathering an early storm and maybe beating Price. But I think I'm going to go with Price a little bit. Again, it's a true pick 'em fight, so none of us could be really that confident with it, but I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Price. He impressed me enough that I think Morano's good, and he's a little bit more steady in this spot, but I think I like what I see as far as Price's offense goes. I think he's going to be a little bit more effective with his strikes, maybe with his grappling along the way. So if his cardio holds up, I think he could probably pull away with the win here, or he maybe even get a stoppage over Morano. So close fight, but I'm slightly leaning towards Price.
I'll fully admit that I underestimated Price in his UFC debut. I thought that he was not good on the feet and that his ground game, while he was capable, I didn't think that he would be able to get Brandon Thatch to the floor and then put him away as easily as he did. I mean, that was a really, really impressive performance that I just didn't see coming. And especially based off of a lot of the film that we saw in the lead up to that fight, he looked like he'd be out of his depth, but he clearly wasn't. Now, this time around, he's facing someone in Alex Morano who is better on the ground than Thatch was, clearly. So I don't think Price can just steamroll him on the ground. And on the feet, while Morano isn't a world beater, he knows what he's doing, and he pushes a high enough pace that I think Price could get himself in some trouble here. Price doesn't have the best striking defense. He's not that powerful of a striker. He's not that accurate of a striker. I don't think he's that dangerous overall. And maybe I'm still underestimating Price, but even though Morano hasn't been that impressive so far in the UFC, he has been able to kind of dig deep and make things happen. I mean, he did have the close, controversial win over Noak, and then in his last fight, he was losing it, and then Muntasri gassed, and then Morano took over. So it's just all about, can Morano just push a pace and keep it, and can Price kind of impose his will? And I don't think Price will, so I'm going to side with Alex Morano. I think he probably just wins a decision that he deserves this time, as long as he can avoid being put on his back, and I think he does. Now, moving on to the first fight on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a women's strawweight contest between Tisha Torres, who is 7-1, and Beck Rawlings, who is 7-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Torres minus 280, the comeback on Rawlings at plus 200. Right now, it's Torres minus 275, the comeback on Rawlings at plus 235. So a spot where line margins have tightened up a little bit. And there, again, is two-way action on this fight as well. So line holding steady. I think it's fair. I mean, these guys, or girls, I should say, rather, they did fight and compete on The Ultimate Fighter. So they do have a matchup already against each other. Very familiar with each other, obviously, as well. In their first meeting, it was pretty competitive, actually. I mean, Rawlings was in there. I think she lost round one, competitive round one. She was doing okay in round two and then made a mistake and honestly had ground control over Torres and just basically blew it, let her up, and Torres was able to steal a close fight there. So I think it will be competitive because the way these ladies match up. I mean, Torres is by far, I think, the more complete, better fighter of the two. I've been very impressed with her throughout her whole career. I mean, there's always been some hype and buzz around Torres, but it was for a reason. I mean, the girl's really good. She's got speed. She's got a little bit of pop in her punches. She doesn't finish people. I mean, that's, I guess, the knock. If you could say anything negative about Torres, is she's a decision machine. I mean, she doesn't have a tremendous amount of finishing ability, but that being said, you can't underestimate her. I mean, her striking is pretty good. And her ground game is actually pretty good as well. She's got some wrestling. So even though she's not a finisher, she outpoints most people, and for a reason. She's tough to beat, and I think that's what's probably going to happen here. I think Rawlings is going to have to be aggressive. She's going to have to fight a little bit smarter. I mean, she's going to get outpointed by Torres on the feet. She'll be competitive there. I think she'll probably hold her own as far as the grappling exchanges go along the way. If she's able to get top position this time, I think she should basically control and try to lay on it and stall a little bit where she can get some points on the judges' cards as well. So I think she might be able to do that at times. But overall, I think the fight takes place standing, and it basically Torres outpoints Rawlings. I think it's going to be hard to get a finish either way here. So got to lean with the favorite here. I think it will be probably more competitive than most of us think, but I still lean towards Torres.
Yeah, some people forget that they've already fought. Granted, it was on The Ultimate Fighter, and it was more competitive than I expected. Torres was the better striker, and Rawlings actually was able to get top position for a little bit in that fight. And that kind of was Torres' kryptonite on the show. I mean, Randa Marcos took her down, Carlos Sparza took her down, and even Rawlings took her down. I do think that that's something that she's been working on extensively ever since, because she kind of got embarrassed there. I mean, she was somebody that was, I believe, the number one pick, number one seed, and then she kept getting taken down. So that's a weakness that she's put a lot of time on. And I do believe that she has improved her wrestling significantly now, and that her ground game is, while not elite, it's definitely good enough to avoid being stuck on her back like a turtle. So I don't think that Rawlings will have an edge on the floor if this fight does go there. I think Torres at this point probably has the better wrestling of the two, and then Torres is definitely the better striker. Rawlings does have a bit of pop in her punches, so Torres is going to have to be a little bit cautious. But that being said, I don't think Torres has ever been hurt on the feet. I mean, she has a good chin, good defense, and if anybody's going to get hurt in this fight, it's probably Rawlings. She's been knocked out on the Australian circuit, and then she got knocked out by Paige VanZant, of all people, with that jumping switch kick. So while Torres isn't the most powerful striker, she does land a lot of punches and bunches, and if she can connect on Rawlings and hurt her, then I think she can swarm her and put her away. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Tisha Torres get a finish here. So I'm going to pick Tisha Torres. Now, moving on up to the bantamweight division, we have Ricardo Ramos, who is 9-1, making his UFC debut against Michinori Tanaka, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Tanaka minus 230, the comeback on Ramos at plus 170. Right now, looking over five times, it is Tanaka minus 185. The comeback on Ramos is plus 160. Still 2-1s out there across the board looking at the Don Best screen. So it looks like Five Dimes has the lowest price right now on Tanaka. That means a little bit more action coming in Ramos's way. And it is fairly accurate. I mean, there again is two-way action on this fight as well, but they are getting hit a little bit more on Ramos. Tough spot here because, man, if you look at Ramos, obviously he's a prospect that has a lot of potential. I mean, he's only 21 years old. He's got a decent resume outside of the UFC thus far as well. That's why he's able to get into the UFC. He's 9-1 overall. He's a legacy fighting vet. He's a long rangy fighter, subspecialist, really. He's really slick on the ground. Always attacking, always looking for the finish. His stand-up's actually decent as well. His kicks, his knees, his timing with that stuff. So he's just a dangerous fighter. The problem is he still needs to get tested a little bit. He still has his own flaws. I mean, even in Legacy, he got his back taken and actually got submitted as well. And a lot of people were somewhat surprised that that happened still. But again, he's raw. He's improving. He's going to have some flaws in his game. But this is another big step up in competition here against Tanaka. I mean, Tanaka, obviously, we know, I mean, he's faced decent competition throughout his UFC career thus far. He's had some mixed results, some really competitive fights because it's just the way he goes about stuff. I mean, Tanaka's the ultimate grinder. He's not bad on the feet either, even though he doesn't have knockouts on the feet. He's actually pretty decent standing. He's got a little bit of pop in his punches, mixes things up well. But, I mean, his wrestling, his takedown ability, his scrambling, everything about his ground game is really, really impressive. And that's basically what wins him more battles than not. So Tanaka has faced better competition. He's just a little bit further ahead of the game right now against Ramos. So I'm going to pick him to win, but this is a tough fight because, I mean, I've been a big fan of Tanaka. I think he's one of the better prospects coming out of Japan, to be honest with you, right now. But that being said, Ramos is so long, he's going to have a huge reach advantage in this fight, and he's so offensively dangerous that, I mean, Tanaka could find himself in some problems along the way here. So it's another spot that I think all the bettors out there have to be careful. If you're banking on Tanaka, even though it seems like it's kind of a safe matchup because this is might be a step down in competition for him, it's still a tough fight because Ramos, even though he might not look great at times on tape, he's still, I think, getting the type of fighter that's going to get better fight by fighting a very dangerous opponent to face. So I would be cautious betting this fight, but to me, I'm still going to lean a little bit more towards Tanaka.
Ricardo Ramos is definitely an exciting talent, and he's just 21 years old. So there is a lot of room for growth right now. And I mean, he's already UFC caliber. My issue is, I mean, they're really throwing him right into the fire. You would think that he would be facing someone at the bottom tier of the bantamweight division or a fighter that was also making their UFC debut in a spot like this. But, I mean, they just went in there and they're like, all right, you're facing Michinori Tanaka. And in my opinion, Tanaka is probably the best of the Japanese imports that came over a few years ago, like Sasaki and a few others. So I just think that this is a little too much too soon for Ramos. I mean, he's a decent striker and his ground game is excellent. I mean, he can really transition into submissions very well, but Tanaka is huge for the bantamweight division, cuts a lot of weight, very physically strong. And I just don't know if Ramos is going to be able to deal with him. I know that Ramos is actually really long as well and could give Tanaka some troubles in grappling exchanges. But, I mean, Tanaka just went in there against Rani Yaya, and even though he lost that fight, I mean, he didn't get submitted. He didn't get in huge trouble in that fight. And I just think at this point in time, Tanaka is just the more experienced fighter that has faced better competition and just isn't going to be overwhelmed a little bit with that debut octagon experience. So I'm picking Tanaka, but I do think that Ricardo Ramos does have a bright future. I just don't think he wins this fight. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Chaz Skelly, who is 16-2, taking on Chris Gritsmacher, who is 13-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Skelly minus 260 to come back on Gritsmacher plus 180. Right now it's Skelly minus 260 to come back on Gritsmacher is plus 220. So this line bounced up and down a little bit as well. Two action coming into this fight. Line margins have tightened up as well. A tough fight. I mean, always a tough fight with Skelly. It's tough to pick, tough to predict because the guy is a very talented fighter. But at the same time, he drives you crazy if you're betting on the guy because his cardio seems to be more than suspect in most cases, and he makes some bonehead mistakes. But that being said, I mean, if you look at his resume inside the UFC, the guy has the ability to finish fights, obviously. I mean, look at his last fight against Blanco. I mean, he went in there and got the job done quick. That's how smooth this guy is on the ground. I mean, he has really slick submissions. He's got good wrestling to go along with it, of course. So he dominates the ground game in most cases against most fighters that he faces. His stand-up game's not bad. I mean, it's getting better, but obviously that's where you can exploit him a little bit. And then again, his cardio and his conditioning is always a question mark. So that's a head-scratcher with Skelly big time. I mean, how much can you trust your money with a guy that's going to gas and make some bonehead mistakes from time to time, even though he is a very talented fighter? So Skelly being a favorite here, can he get Gritsmacher down and maybe possibly submit him? I think if Skelly gets anybody's back, you're in some serious danger around your neck or whatnot too. So yes, I think he could do that, but Gritsmacher's probably flying under the radar a little bit. Obviously he trains with the lab. He's an Ultimate Fighter veteran as well. The guy has some experience. He trains with good people. Like I just mentioned, he's kind of a grinding type of fighter. He's an aggressive fighter that pushes forward and just tries to outgrind you a little bit, outwork you a little bit. He's got nice dirty boxing, a nice tie clinch. He uses his elbows very effectively as well. He's got decent boxing overall. But throws some hard kicks as well. I mean, especially the low kicks. He goes after your leg and tries to chew those up. So a lot of good things that you like from Gritsmacher. I think he needs to wrestle a little bit more, though. Honestly, I don't think he uses his wrestling enough at times. He tries to go more defensively with his wrestling, keep the fight upright or whatnot. But I think he does need to use that. But against Skelly, I'm not sure if that's exactly the smartest game plan and trying to mingle in Skelly's world here. So I think Gritsmacher is going to try to keep the fight upright and try to outstrike Skelly and do some damage along the way and just kind of out-tough him and outlast him. And it's possible that he does it. But for me, I mean, from watching footage on Gritsmacher, he has been taken down or at least getting his back taken at times. He makes some mistakes is what I'm trying to spit out here on the ground. And if you make mistakes against a guy like Skelly, you're done. So it's hard for me to actually pick Gritsmacher in this fight. I think Skelly probably does find the submission finish here along the way. But if not, I mean, Skelly could be in some trouble, and we could see him losing on the scorecards or even get finished late if he does gas. So another spot that's kind of tough. Gritsmacher might come in and be a live dog here, but I can't really count on it. I think Skelly probably gets a sub and gets a finish like he tends to do at times. So my pick is Skelly.
This fight is honestly a lot tougher than most people would think. I mean, I know Skelly's a big favorite, but I think it's more because people just don't know Chris Gritsmacher that well. Gritsmacher is a grinder. I mean, a really big, strong, powerful wrestler that has pretty good use of top control and positioning. Now, obviously, Skelly is a very dangerous fighter. He has some power on the feet. He has some pretty good submission ability. So if there's a finish in this fight, it is almost certainly coming from Skelly. And also, Skelly cuts a ton of weight, and he's very physically strong for the division as well. And he's can be a bit of a grinder. It's just, it's tough for him because he doesn't have the best conditioning. Usually when you think of a powerful, strong wrestler, you think of a guy that can just go and go and take people down and hold them down for three rounds, no problem. But Skelly probably has some of the worst conditioning of any of the wrestling-based fighters in the UFC. That being said, you cannot take away this guy's heart. I mean, he digs deep in fights, even when he's gassed, and he just makes things happen. Like when he choked out Kevin Souza, I mean, he had no business winning that fight, and then out of nowhere just gets him down and gets him out in the second round when he was exhausted. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you can really like about Skelly. But, you know, when he fought somebody like Darren Elkins, who is a similar kind of grinder to Chris Gritsmacher, it's just people don't know Gritsmacher yet. They know Elkins a lot better. Elkins had his way with Skelly in the second and third rounds as Skelly started to slow down. So I'm not saying that it's a certainty, but if Skelly starts to slow down after that first round, even if he wins it, I'd keep an eye on live betting, and there might be an opportunity for Gritsmacher if Skelly doesn't put him away quickly. That being said, I'm going to side with Skelly. I mean, he's got the experience. He's been evolving a little bit, and he's picked up some quality wins. So I'm going to go with Skelly, but I am definitely exercising caution here. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a heavyweight contest between Adam Milstead, who is 8-1, and Curtis Blades, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Helping Blades -185, the comeback on Milstead at +145 right now over at Five Dimes. It is Blades -240, Milstead is +200. So two heavyweight prospects, Blades getting a little bit more love early on from the bettors. Not shocked, wasn't sure exactly how much respect he would get, but I mean, I can understand why people are coming in Blades' way. Not that Milstead is a slouch in his own right. I mean, both these guys are definitely decent prospects, I think, in the heavyweight division. They're fun to watch fight, and they're going to win their fair share of fights. So I'm almost surprised that they matched him up this early in their careers, because I think both of these guys can kind of make a little run, you know, towards possibly title contention. I mean, we'll see how far they get. It's still too early for both guys, and both guys have showed some flaws in their games thus far, but both guys have also showed some very good promise. So to me, I mean, starting off with Blades first, he's athletic, big, strong, explosive heavyweight. I mean, he's got great wrestling, ground and pound, nice boxing, pushes a very high pace. And he's just basically all around a solid guy. He does get rocked on the feet a little bit, as evident in his last fight. I mean, he was in a war with East, but he managed to recover quickly, even though he did get rocked a couple times in that fight, and then just did what he had to do and got a nice quality win on his resume. So, I mean, his defense could definitely improve, but I didn't like the fact that he got rocked, but I like the fact that he was able to recover quick. So Blades showed me somewhat of a chin. And again, he does have power. He's got a mean ground and pound game. He's got good wrestling. So that's what he's going to try to do to Milstead as well. I mean, no secret, he's actually said that in interviews, even on our site at MMAOddsBreaker.com as well. He's going to try to get this fight to the ground and just basically pound Milstead out. Milstead, though, is no slouch in his own right. I mean, this guy's a talented fighter as well. Obviously, his UFC debut against De La Roca was a success. I think a lot of people are probably underestimating him somewhat because they weren't as impressed with his opponent. But overall, Milstead has some nice boxing. He's got some speed. He's got some power. He's got some wrestling in his own right. He can be taken down, but he manages to scramble up pretty decent in most cases as well, and then keep the fight in his realm, which is on the feet, honestly. I think that's where his best attribute is, because he does have pretty nice boxing and power to go along with it. His cardio is somewhat of a question mark. I mean, he's the type of fighter, I think, so far that seems to fight maybe a little bit slower at times, but I mean, or he seems to be getting tired, but he'll still fight through it. Doesn't matter. I mean, you can't count him out at all. I mean, he's able to still, I mean, he was tired in his debut and he was still able to finish that fight. So he's the type of fighter that might look tired, but he's always going to be dangerous, even if the fight goes a little bit deeper as well. So this is going to be a tough test for both fighters. We're going to see who exploits whose weaknesses the most. I mean, because Milstead does have a wrestling background in his own right. What I don't like is that Milstead does have a full-time job. And I mean, so he's not 100% focused on fighting, but he is getting some quality training time in outside of around his job as well. So there's some negatives with Milstead. I wish he was a little bit more full-time in this sport. And I mean, who knows? He might be at this moment, or he might potentially be here down the road. We don't know that. So a big win over Blades would probably certainly make him think, at least. So we'll see. If he becomes a full-time fighter, I think he's going to take his game to another level. So that only gives Blades a little bit more of an edge, in my opinion. I think Blades has a higher ceiling in the UFC as well, and I think he probably does win this fight. Now, again, the line is getting a little bit crazy, though, because these guys are both legit prospects, and I think that over 200, 240-ish where it is right now is a little bit dangerous. So be careful, again, betting and laying that kind of price on Blades, because you cannot exactly count Milstead out. But I'm going to pick Blades to win this fight. I think, like I said, we're going to see some really good things out of both these guys, but especially Blades moving forward.
Yeah, Adam Milstead, Curtis Blades are both excellent heavyweight prospects. Milstead, in my opinion, clearly the better striker on the feet, while Blades
has that elite wrestling to fall back on, and when he does get you down, you can be in huge, huge trouble. Blades is a tenacious wrestler with, when he gets in top position, I mean, he just drops some brutal ground and pound, and he can either ride you out to win a decision, but for the most part, I mean, he goes for the finish, he goes for the kill. So Adam Milstead is going to have to do everything in his power to keep this fight standing and to do as much damage to Blades as possible in the, while it is standing. Blades isn't a complete novice on the feet. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He has some basic fundamentals down. It's just, he's not an elite technical, stand-up guy. So if Milstead is able to keep this fight standing, I don't think that Blades will be able to hang around with him. I mean, in Blades' UFC debut, he went in there against Francis Ngannou, who is, in my opinion, a guy that could be the future champion. And Blades was tough. I mean, he repeatedly, tenaciously went for takedowns, but Ngannou was just able to either get up quickly or stuff him, and he did a lot of damage. I mean, Blades' eye swelled up, and he couldn't continue. So I think Milstead could have a similar path to victory, but I just don't see Milstead being quite as physical. I mean, Milstead is about the same height as Blades, but he's a little bit smaller physically. He's about 20, 30 pounds lighter, and I just think Blades overpowers him at some point with that big, strong wrestling background. And even though Milstead does have a little bit of a wrestling background, I don't think it's going to be enough. I think Blades gets top position here, and I think Blades either TKOs him or wins a decision. So my pick's going to be Curtis Blades. Now moving on to the opening bout of the Fox Sports 1 main card. We have a women's strawweight contest between Jessica Andrade, who is 15-5, and Angela Hill, who is 5-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Andrade, minus 245, the comeback on Hill, plus 175. This has been the biggest mover on the entire card. Right now it's Andrade, minus 550, the comeback on Hill, plus 425. So believe it or not, this line actually dipped down below the opening price at one point. Early action was coming in on Hill, but after that, forget about it. All action on Andrade. I mean, it's been Parlay City. It's been straight bet city all the way up. I mean, obviously there's more parlays getting hit at around 400 or 500 at that price than there are straight bets at this point. But early on, I mean, people were laying the 2-3, you know, up to 4-1, pretty straight as well. And a lot of max bets coming in as reported. So there's definitely heavier action on Andrade for the sportsbook. So they're going to be needing Hill, at least the some of the places that went up pretty early. But again, Hill at this price, plus 425, there's definitely going to be some dog action back in on Hill, especially on fight day. I'm sure we're going to be a lot closer than most people realize, even with a huge move like this. But regardless, I am surprised because I think Angela Hill does definitely get some respect overall from the MMA community. People realize she's an Ultimate Fighter vet. I know she didn't have a good run in the UFC, but outside of that, she has improved a ton. She's been working very hard, and I think she's a really fun fighter to watch, honestly. Her striking is a thing of beauty. Very technical, very smart. She's got some pop in her punches as well. She mixes things up well. So on the feet, she's a force to be reckoned with, especially at 115 pounds. She's definitely an elite-level striker at times. Now, Andrade, you could say a lot of the same things. I mean, she definitely could strike with the best of them, especially at 115 pounds. She's got some crazy power that she's brought down with her to 115 pounds that she's always had in her arsenal. But better yet, I mean, her wrestling, her takedown ability obviously is pretty decent here. I think her submission game, she has nasty chokes. I mean, she's definitely a capable fighter. In 115 pounds, she's looked great. I mean, they were going to basically toss her a title fight, and she wants to get a little bit more experience. So they fed her basically somebody that she should beat in Hill, but she's still a challenge. I mean, like I said, I think Hill is definitely not somebody to overlook. I mean, obviously a lot of bettors out there are, but that being said, it's going to be a test for Andrade here as well. So interesting fight. I got to lean a little bit more towards Andrade because I do think her ground game, if she wins this fight, that's how she wins it. She probably gets a takedown and probably finishes the fight by sub. I think that's what most people are banking on that have come in on this line. She has enough power, and she could probably win by decision as well. So she has more ways to win, but that's why she's favored. Now, I don't agree with the line being plus 425 on Hill, though. I think Hill is better than that. I think the Hill is going to look to keep this fight upright, obviously, and do some damage along the way on the feet. So if she has some success, I think everybody's going to get burnt by going crazy on Andrade. But that being said, it's hard to argue with it. I do think Andrade wins it as far as the pick goes. But as far as bets go, I think there probably is a little bit of value at this point at plus 425 on Hill. But it is tough because I do understand that Andrade should win this fight, and then she moves up again, probably to the title picture. And who knows from there? I mean, she's always a dangerous fighter. She's definitely one of the better fighters at 115 pounds, but much respect to Hill as well, in my opinion. I think you guys got to be careful out there for this one too. So my pick is Andrade, but not as confident as everybody else in the world out there.
This is a bit of a tricky fight, and it could definitely be a trap fight for Andrade. Obviously, Andrade is a huge talent. She was dangerous in the bantamweight division as an undersized bantamweight, and now that she's cut the 20 pounds and dropped down to strawweight, all the things that made her dangerous at bantamweight have made her lethal at strawweight. I mean, she still pushes that absolute insane pace, one of the highest volume strikers on the entire roster. And then she's just able to go for 15 minutes, and she just overwhelms girls. There just aren't a lot of females on the roster that can keep up with her. And Andrade has gone in there against top competition already in the strawweight division. I mean, her debut at strawweight was against Jessica Penney, who fought for the title, and she just smoked her, just completely blew her out of the water. And then she goes out there against Joanne Calderwood, who is somebody that I think the UFC was hoping could fight for a title someday. And Andrade overwhelmed her on the feet, forced Calderwood to shoot for takedowns, and then choked her out with a really nasty guillotine choke that she is very, very good at. So Andrade is on a roll right now, and with a win here, I mean, she could be in line for a title opportunity. Now, Angela Hill, she's another person you can't sleep on. I know that her initial UFC run wasn't that impressive. I mean, she lost her first fight on The Ultimate Fighter, and then she got taken out by Rose Namajunas and Tisha Torres in the UFC, but I think that that is not the best representation of who she is. I mean, all three of those people that beat her were basically top five or six strawweights in the world. And she's proven that she's definitely a capable fighter since then. I mean, her run in Invicta was impressive. She picked up some quality stoppages and then went out there and not only had a great fight against Livia Souza, but won the Invicta strawweight title and then defended it in a five-round fight. So her conditioning is good. Her power is good. Her striking is technical. So if this is just a pure stand-up fight, anything can happen. I think Andrade's chin is a little bit vulnerable. So if Hill can land something heavy, she might be able to take Andrade out. That being said, the ability for Andrade to just overwhelm people with that high volume attack is frightening. And there just aren't a lot of girls that are great counter strikers right now in the strawweight division. And I don't know if Angela Hill is going to be able to keep up with Andrade. And if this fight goes to the ground, even though Andrade has been submitted on the ground before, I don't think that Angela Hill is the type that is going to be able to take advantage of that. And if anything, Andrade should be the better ground fighter, especially with that, you know, brutal guillotine choke she possesses that she has two wins now in the UFC with. So I'm going to side with Jessica Andrade, but again, just be careful out there. I mean, this line is way out of control, especially if it just stays a stand-up fight and with somebody as powerful as Angela Hill. So I'm siding with Andrade, but again, be careful. Now moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Anthony Hamilton, who is 15-6, taking on UFC newcomer Marcel Fortuna, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Hamilton, minus 265, the comeback on Fortuna, plus 185. This line has moved a little bit. It's down to minus 185 for Hamilton now. Fortuna is plus 160. So action coming in on the dog a little bit. I mean, in my opinion, I knew that Hamilton doesn't get a ton of respect from the betting community out there. I mean, let's face it. He's, as far as the heavyweight goes, he does have some qualities about him, but I mean, I think that he's got some flaws about him as well. And a lot of people basically look at him as kind of a lower tier heavyweight in the UFC division. He's got some issues with his chin. Outside of that, though, he does have some decent wrestling, some decent power, and obviously comes from a great camp as well. So there's some things I like about Hamilton. I don't think he's as bad as everybody thinks he is at times, but then again, I mean, it's justified that people aren't very fond of him or bet against him or try to fade him at times as well because of that chin. And then again, he got submitted last fight by Ngannou as well. So that was a bit of a surprise the way it ended. But that being said, Hamilton's still a big, strong guy. And I think Fortuna moving up to heavyweight from light heavyweight. He was actually on the Ultimate Fighter 23 show, and he did fight, obviously, at a lower division there, and now he's moving. I just don't understand why he's moving up. I don't know if he's going to – he thinks he has a bigger advantage here. I mean, he's going to be small for the heavyweight division, and unless he's able to take a wrestler down, I think he's going to struggle here unless Hamilton just gives up his back or in a scramble, something crazy happens. So Fortuna is one of these guys that is a BJJ black belt. He's a ground specialist for sure. He's more than capable of ending fights on the ground. On the feet, he's not bad. He's got a little bit of power, but that's not where he wants to play out the fight. In most cases, he uses striking to set up his ground attack, and it uses his ground game to win fights. That's the way he goes about it, or grind people out a little bit as well. I just think he's going to struggle a little bit against Hamilton. Now, his wrestling, I should say Fortuna's wrestling is not really that bad for a BJJ guy, but I just don't like the matchup against Hamilton here. If he doesn't get Hamilton down, I think he could be in for some trouble here in this fight. So I'm going to pick Hamilton to win this fight. Again, it's one spot that you can't have a lot of confidence because Hamilton's chin is so bad, and he does tend to make some mistakes along the way. He's been subbed a few times in his career, and he's facing one of the best sub guys he's ever fought coming off of a sub loss. So a lot of question marks around this fight. Either way, I just don't get why Fortuna is moving up. I guess we're going to see here soon. Maybe it is a better fit for him, and he knows what he's doing. So I don't know. This is a strange matchup for me. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Hamilton because I do think – that he can kind of sprawl, brawl, keep it up, and he's probably the better striker here and could do a little bit more damage. So another spot, though, you got to be careful. Not very confident in Hamilton, but I'm picking him to win.
This fight's tricky. I mean, Marcel Fortuna is a light heavyweight. It's not like he's taking this fight on short notice just to get into the UFC. So I don't know why he's moving up to heavyweight. I mean, this is a guy that competed just fine at light heavyweight and has a strong submission game. I guess that this was just the best way to get to the UFC, but it just doesn't really make a lot of sense. I expect him to drop back down to the light heavyweight division after this fight, as long as he performs admirably. And there is potential to win. I mean, it's not like Anthony Hamilton is an absolute world beater. I mean, he has talent. He's big. He's strong. He comes in pretty close to the heavyweight limit. He has power, and Hamilton does have a bit of wrestling too, so he can control people on the ground. He's done it before, and he can just blitz you and take you out like he did against Damian Grabowski. So Fortuna's going to have to be a little bit careful here. That being said, Hamilton can also be controlled and put out. I mean, Todd Duffy knocked him out with one punch. You have fighters like his last fight, Ngannou was able to tap him out, and then even before that, Alexei Oleinik was able to take him out. So when Hamilton loses, he can lose hard, and if Fortuna is able to utilize kind of his speed and aggression, there are probably going to be opportunities to get this fight to the floor and to get a submission, and Hamilton is definitely capable of being submitted. That being said, I think the size difference is going to be really big here, and I think Fortuna's might just get bullied. So even though there is an opportunity here for Fortuna to win, I'm going to side with Anthony Hamilton. I think that's kind of the safe play, and my pick is going to be Hamilton to either win by knockout or decision. Now dropping down to the light heavyweight division, we have Ovin St. Preux, who is 19-8, taking on Volkan Ozdemir, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in OSP -315, the comeback on Ozdemir at +235. Right now it's St. Preux at -335. Ozdemir is at +275. So basically, line staying steady across the board. Looks like it's about 3-1s out there as well. So 3-1 favorite for OSP over Ozdemir. This is a tough fight as well. I mean, OSP obviously didn't really look his best in his last fight, which was somewhat of a surprise to most people. I mean, especially how he got beat. I mean, there's no question that Manoa is a beast on the feet, and he's got knockout power and whatnot. But I think, like I said, it was probably OSP's worst performance to date, even though it was against a tough, dangerous opponent there. So lost a couple in a row. I mean, he went the distance with John Jones in that fight. And I mean, a lot of people were down on Jones, how he looked in that spot there. So I guess you can give OSP some respect in that aspect. But again, coming off that disappointing loss and then just getting knocked out like he did against Manoa, there's some question marks about OSP. And a lot of it is his defense, honestly. On the feet, it does make me mad because, man, the guy offensively – He's a beast with his kicks. He kicks so hard. He's athletic. He's got power. I mean, he's unorthodox with his striking, so it could be very effective, especially with that kind of power. He mixes things up well overall, and I mean, he's definitely a dangerous guy on the feet. The problem is, I mean, his hands are low. He's got tall man defense in a lot of ways too as well. And then again, he got exploded his last fight. So, and I've always thought that as well. I mean, I know that you don't usually see OSP getting knocked out very often, but his defense was a big issue in my mind for a while now. So he needs to address that. And I guess Ozdemir, I mean, Ozdemir is definitely one of those guys that can exploit that. Most of his wins are by knockout. He's got a ton of power on the feet. He could catch OSP's chin and put him out. I wouldn't be surprised, especially coming off of a knockout loss. So a lot of question marks right now with OSP, but is he the better fighter? Is he the better grinder at this point? Does he have the better quality experience? Yes. So I think OSP, his best way to win this fight is getting the fight down. Ozdemir overall is a pretty well-rounded fighter, but again, he's more of a striking-based fighter. So if any weakness to his game, it's getting put on his back. It's getting out-grinded a little bit. I mean, if you look back, he did fight in Bellator and actually suffered a loss to a solid wrestler in Bellator by just basically getting grounded out or whatnot as well and submitted. So, I mean, he does have that flaw on the ground where you take him down, you could exploit his weakness a little bit. But his takedown defense is improving for sure. He's getting better. He knows he needs to work on that aspect of the game. And then, like I said, on the feet, he's actually pretty dangerous. So I'm not sure how much he's going to progress or whatnot. He deserves to be making his UFC debut. And this is kind of a winnable fight for him right now as well. So he could be a dangerous guy as an underdog here for sure. But I still think that OSP is going to fight smart. He knows that Ozdemir did suffer a loss again by getting put on his back, getting taken down and getting beat on the ground. So I think that OSP is going to try to utilize that same game plan and probably be successful. So I think that's what he does, especially coming off of a loss on the feet. I think OSP is going to look extra hard to get this fight to the ground and to kind of dominate the ground game. So I think that's his biggest attribute, and he's going to be smart and probably go about that. So I'm going to pick OSP to win this fight. But again, hopefully he bounces back. I'm a little bit concerned with him just losing like he did and coming off of two losses in a row, actually, where his head is right now. But the pick is OSP.
This fight definitely has upset potential, especially after St. Preux got manhandled a little bit on the feet in his last fight by Jimmy Manua. So Ozdemir absolutely has that ability to take people out. I mean, almost all of his wins are by knockout. So this guy clearly is dangerous on the feet. And if St. Preux gets to into an extended striking exchange with him, there's definitely the possibility that he can get put out. That being said, Ozdemir, his biggest weakness is definitely on the ground. I mean, you saw that in Bellator where he just got slammed to the canvas and then he got eventually submitted. So if he was able to get basically tapped out by someone that is not even close to Ovin St. Preux's level overall, then I do think that the possibility here for St. Preux to bounce back and get a victory on the ground is very real. A lot of people forget that St. Preux, I mean, when he first started in Strikeforce, he was more of a pure athlete, and he was taking a lot of people down. He was going for calf slicers on the ground. I mean, this guy definitely has a good idea of what's going on the canvas. He just doesn't use it all the time. He also had a nice impressive submission of Nikita Krylov, or kind of early in his UFC run. So if this fight goes to the floor, I think St. Preux is going to be dominating it. I mean, St. Preux is an excellent athlete, and even though he is coming off back-to-back losses, I think he's hungry, and he's still definitely a capable UFC light heavyweight. As long as he doesn't only stand and trade with Ozdemir, then I think that his odds of winning this fight are very high. It's just all about him making intelligent choices, and I think that he will make that intelligent choice, so I'm going to side with Ovin St. Preux to get the win. I think he does get this to the floor, and I think that's where he wins it. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Abel Trujillo, who is 15-6 with one no contest, taking on James Vick, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Another tough fight. I open this exactly a pick of -120 either way for Trujillo and for Vic. And right now it's actually -110 either way. So line margins have tightened up. And there has been two action in this fight as well. Trujillo got some early action and then Vic actually got action back and line flipped. And here we are back to the original spot of a pick 'em. Tough fight because both these guys can definitely win this fight, honestly. I mean, Trujillo We know he's a beast. We know what kind of power he possesses. We know that he's improved his game quite a bit coming into the UFC, and he's gained a lot of experience. And he's one of the hardest punchers, definitely at 155 pounds. I mean, very dangerous, especially obviously standing. I mean, if he gets on top of you on the ground, he's dangerous. And then he even showed a little bit of a submission game recently as well. So, I mean, a couple fights back, he submitted Tony Sims, which I was honestly surprised. That choke was pretty nice. I mean, he sunk in it pretty well. And then bouncing back with a decision win over after that fight, actually kept his momentum going with a decision win over Rinaldi as well. So cardio seems to be an issue at times with Trujillo. But that being said, he's again showed that he can go three rounds at times as well and be successful doing so. So his wrestling's decent. His striking ability, especially how dangerous he is with his power, is definitely more than decent. I mean, he's very a dangerous and capable fighter of knocking people out. And then he's facing a guy with Vic that's going to be the longer, more technical fighter overall. I think really Vic has more ability, even on the grounds. He's just a better mixed martial artist, and he's got length on top of it. But the problem with Vic is he's got that tall man defense again. I mean, we've obviously seen it be exploited. I mean, in his last fight, and before that even, I mean, he's been getting rocked for a while now and getting kind of – his chin is held up enough that he's able to usually finish a fight. But, I mean, look at what Darius was able to do to him. So that's scary when you're considering, you know, you got knocked out by Darius and then you're facing a harder puncher in Trujillo your very next fight. You got to definitely tighten up that defense. But Vic is sneaky good, meaning that, I mean, he could choke you out. He could get top position. His ground game is very good. On the feet, he's got devastating knees. He's got length that he uses relatively well, and he does have some power on his feet as well. So it's tough. I mean, like I said, technically speaking, I think Vic is the better fighter of the two. He's got definitely some advantages in this fight, but the problem is if he can't get this fight in his realm or even on the ground or make Trujillo make a mistake early on, he could be sleeping in this fight. So I'm going to pick Trujillo. I think he does land on Vic along the way, probably fairly early, and I'm not sure if Vic's chin can take it. I think that, you know, like I said, I give him credit for kind of getting rocked and hanging in there in most of his fights, but I mean, Darius recently knocked him out. I think Trujillo is going to put him to sleep if he connects. You know, I could see him dropping him and then just one more bomb on the floor and knocking him out cold. So that's what I think happens. I think Vic can also grab a choke along the way as well. So this is exactly why it's a pick-em type of fight. These guys can both win this fight. It could go back and forth, and I'm expecting the action to continue that way. But as far as the pick goes, I am picking Trujillo to win this fight.
This fight is a bit tricky because that's just the way that Abel Trujillo fights. Trujillo is a very dangerous, powerful striker that can just blitz people and take them out. And he also can be dominated on the ground by a really good submission guy, or he can get knocked out or rocked on the feet himself. We've seen a little bit of everything with him. And one thing I will say is it does look like his conditioning is getting a little bit better. I mean, he did go all three rounds with Jordan Rinaldi in his last fight. So he's capable of that, which is nice. That being said, James Vick is a guy that you don't want to screw around with for an extended amount of time. I mean, if you want to face James Vick, you want to put him out as quickly as possible. And that is definitely something Trujillo should be capable of doing. Vick is really long for the lightweight division, but his striking defense is atrocious. And he does not have a very good chin. You saw that in the Darius fight where he finally faced somebody with good power and really good technique on the feet, and they just absolutely steamrolled him. And I think that Trujillo is capable of doing that as well. If Trujillo gets inside on Vic and is able to avoid just staying at the end of his jab, then he should just land some wombo combo on the feet and take him out. But if Trujillo is kind of passive, then Vic can kind of settle into a groove with his jab, and then it'll open up opportunities for him to catch Trujillo with a submission, because Vic's guillotine chokes and just overall all the chokes are really dangerous with Vic because of his really long limbs. He can come at you with some strange angles that people just aren't used to. So, I mean, that's how he's able to pull off some submissions against some pretty high profile fighters. So I do think that Trujillo can win this fight, but if he isn't able to put Vic away quickly, then the door does start to close a little bit for that window. So for the window of opportunity for Trujillo to get the win. So I'm picking Trujillo but I am very, very cautious with this one because I honestly only think Trujillo wins if this fight is ended in the first round. So my pick is Trujillo, but again, very, very shaky and not confident. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a women's strawweight contest between Alexa Grasso, who is 9-0, and Felice Herrig, who is 11-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up on Grasso -305, the comeback on Herrig at +225. And right now it's Grasso -300, the comeback on Herrig at +250. Early on, Grasso was getting slammed with action. I mean, it was getting crazy, actually. A ton of max bets coming in her way. The line flew up to at least 5-1 or so. I mean, that's how nuts it was at first. Then obviously Herrig, a lot of people realized what was going on and came in on Herrig for the value standpoint alone. And now it's right back down to -300 for Grasso. The comeback on Herrig is +250. So basically right where it opened, it came back down to reality a little bit. And I think it's fair where it's at. I mean, obviously Grasso is the more hyped fighter out of the two right now. Herrig is obviously has had her share of hype along the way. I mean, she's been respected for a few years now amongst the MMA fans and community, especially, you know, in the women's MMA scene. She's definitely one of the more popular fighters out there, and for a good reason. I mean, she's well-rounded. She's been in the game for a while, has a ton of experience, and it's just a tough out. I mean, in my opinion, she's underachieved at times because she does have a well-rounded enough game that I expect her to actually do a little bit better. So, but she is a savvy vet, and she's, again, one of those veterans that's you can't sleep on because she's going to show up and do some great things. I mean, look at her fight against Curran. A lot of people counted her out there, and Curran was a rising prospect, basically, and Herrig came in there and just did her thing, got her to the ground, and subbed her. Herrig did that quick. So in this spot, again, I think Herrig is the better fighter on the ground, and she's going to look to exploit Grasso on the ground. So I think that's where she's going to have a chance in this fight. Also, I mean, obviously on the feet, Herrig's not bad either. She's technical. She's got some nice striking ability as well. But Grasso's just a beast, I think, as far as her boxing's going to be much better. She's going to push a higher pace, especially after she gets a little loose. And she could be the more effective striker for sure. I think she's more dangerous on the feet. She's got a little bit more pop in her punches. Her takedown defense is actually improving, and her ground game's improving as well. So Grasso defends fairly well, and I think she should be able to keep this fight upright. And if she does, she's going to outpoint Herrig and probably get a pretty competitive, but earn a decision win. So I am going to lean towards Grasso. I just think that, man, I mean, 23 years old, I get it. She's getting better fight by fight. You could really see it. I mean, she's actually had some impressive wins thus far in her career, even before the UFC. And a lot of people wanted to see her do extremely well and eventually earn a spot at the title. Obviously not this close, not quite yet, because she has a long way to go to do that and to prove to people that she belongs. But a win over Herrig is definitely one step closer. So the hype on Grasso seems to be legit. Again, she's getting better fight by fight, but I think Herrick's going to come in here and be more than competitive and kind of hold her own and actually present a lot of problems for Grasso. So I'm picking Grasso, but Herrick's going to hold her own, and I do have a lot of respect for her, and I think this is going to be a great fight.
Again, another tricky fight that I think people are not giving enough credit to the underdog in. Obviously, Alexa Grasso is a really talented prospect. She is dangerous on the feet. She doesn't have the most power, but I mean, she just can work people over with solid striking technique. And Felice Herrig, you know, she comes from a striking background in kickboxing, but honestly, I think her best asset is her ground game. She has picked up 2 wins so far in the UFC, and they were both submissions. Her last one was very impressive. I mean, she'd been out for a while, but she clearly showed that she'd been working hard and training hard, and she was able to easily dominate Kaylin Curran on the canvas and take her out. So one thing that we still don't know about is her conditioning. That was something that failed her a little bit in some of her losses, primarily against Paige VanZant, where, you know, she started strong and then just ran out of steam and got completely bulldozed in the later rounds. So if this fight gets a little bit extended into the later rounds, will Herrig be able to keep up? That's one thing I am definitely concerned about. But that being said, I think Grasso has shown some vulnerabilities on the ground. She had some moments in her fight against Mizuki Inoue where she was put on her back and she really didn't do a whole lot to get out of that position. So if Herrig can get this fight to the floor, I think there's a really good possibility that she can at least win a round, if not go for a finish. Grasso has, you know, she's not terrible on the ground. It's just, I just don't think she's that good off of her back. So if Herrig is able to do that, then there's definitely a path to victory here. That being said, Grasso is younger. There's a lot of hype behind her. She is definitely improving every time we see her. So I expect that she's going to be even more dangerous this time around. But Felice Herrig is somebody you just can't sleep on. I think I disrespected her a lot earlier in her career. I think I underestimated how good she is capable of being. And I think that she definitely has some upset potential here. And I think that she can get this fight to the floor. And I think that she can control Grasso. My only concern really is if she's able to do it for 3 rounds or at least 2 rounds and then hold on for the 3rd round. So I'm going to pick Herrig tentatively. I think, you know, this might be an opportunity for a hype train to get derailed a little bit, but stranger things have happened and I've been wrong before, but I'm going to side with Felice Herrig. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have Dennis Bermudez, who is 17-5 in a featherweight contest against former featherweight title challenger Chan Sung Jung, the Korean Zombie, who was 13-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Bermudez, -140, the comeback on Jung, even money. The current line, -200 for Bermudez, and the comeback on Jung is +170. So a lot of confidence coming in on Bermudez in this fight early on, at least. And I can, again, I can understand. I mean, Jung's been away for over 3 years, and I think that's a lot in people's minds that they're thinking, man, this guy's going to definitely be rusty. Bermudez is obviously a top featherweight contender. Jung going to get right back in the picture and face a guy like this and have success. It's kind of hard to see. So I get the overall thinking. I mean, there's definitely a chance that Jung comes in here and looks a little bit off, looks a little bit rusty for sure. But that being said, I mean, he took an absence for military leave, I believe. So, I mean, I think he's going to be in fairly decent shape. MMA shape is definitely something different, but I know he's been training as well along the way. It's not like he hasn't been, you know, in the MMA world at all, and he's just strictly military. So he's been getting some training in. He just hasn't had that real-time experience in the cage. So I don't expect him to come in out of shape big time, and maybe he's going to have a little bit of cage rust, but I'm not as concerned, I think, with this spot. I mean, usually when a fighter's off for a certain amount of time and it's injury-related and all that, definitely you got to have some concerns. But I think here maybe people are overestimating Junk's conditioning or his time off here just a little bit too much because of that time off. But again, I do understand it and I respect it. But that being said, how they match up, it's tough. I mean, Bermudez obviously is a great fighter, more so with this ability to control the fight. And I mean, his wrestling is honestly top tier, especially for the featherweight division. I mean, in most cases, he's able to get the fight down, able to control the fight, able to look for the subs. He drops some good ground and pound. If he doesn't finish you, he just basically grinds you out for decision win. So Bermudez is a very tough out. And of course, on the feet, he's got some power as well. His hands are pretty good. So offensively, there's a lot of good things to like about him. I mean, one thing that I am concerned about with Bermudez and always have to be, he's only officially been knocked out one time. But man, he gets rocked quite a bit. Again, give him credit because he recovers and seems to continue in the fight in most cases. But he's been rocked and subbed quite a few times as well. So that's the problem with him. I mean, you can't trust that chin, and he does dive in and gets caught by knees or whatnot. He does tend to make some mistakes on the ground at times. Now his sub defense has gotten better, but still, I mean, he does have some flaws on the ground in his game. And I think that that's an area that Jung can definitely exploit. Even on the feet, I mean, Jung's going to have a reach advantage. His striking's not bad. You talk about some power in his hands. He's got some good kicks to go along with it. Jung has some good grappling, some sneaky good subs as well. So Jung definitely has the advantage as far as jiu-jitsu goes on the ground over Bermudez. I think Jung can hang with Bermudez on the feet, and actually he's going to present some problems because of his length, because of his power as well. So Bermudez is going to be in for a fight here. I'm actually going to pick Jung to win this fight. I think he's going to make a successful return. Now, again, in most circumstances, I'm not going to side with a guy that's been out that long, but I just think that this is a good spot for Jung to kind of get back in the mix with a quality win over Bermudez. I like how he matches up. I think that Jung can hang with him, if not beat him on the feet. I think Jung can submit him on the ground. Of course, I'm worried about Bermudez kind of grinding him out a little bit or as the fight goes, maybe beating him inside as well. So we'll see how it works out. But I just think that Jung is actually a great fighter, and he's going to come back in here and prove that he's right back in the mix right away against a very solid Bermudez. So I'll go against the grain. I'll go against everybody's – what seems to be the common opinion in Bermudez and think that Jung is going to come off and come in here and pull off a successful UFC return. So my pick is Jung.
And there really is no bigger fan of Chan Sung Jung than me. Honestly, his fights in the UFC and in WC were some of my favorites of all time. I mean, this guy has pulled off some absolutely amazing moments in his career, whether it was that fight of the century against Leonard Garcia or the 8-second knockout or 7-second knockout of Mark Hominick or the twister in the rematch against Garcia. I mean, this guy is just every time he gets into the cage, something amazing happens. And it's been really sad to see them gone for so long due to the South Korean mandatory military service. But he's finally back. And we're going to find out a lot this upcoming fight because, man, 3.5 years is such a long time to be away from the cage. I mean, so much can evolve in the sport that you just aren't ready for. Even just minor intricacies. You see it when a lot of veterans come back after long layoffs and they just look slow and not prepared for a lot of the new things that people are doing. Dennis Bermudez is a guy that is just balls to the wall. Like he's very Diego Sanchez-esque, except he's a better finisher. He's got a little bit more power. I think his wrestling's a little bit better. The only thing that really that Bermudez has going against him is he can get too wild and his chin isn't very good. So he can get cracked on the chin and that can set up opportunities for him to get in trouble. I mean, he gets wobbled in a lot of fights and he got finished by Jeremy Stephens due to a brutal knee knockout. And in the Lamas fight, he got hurt on the feet and then submitted. So if Jung is able to get something going on the feet, that could absolutely set up something on the ground. I mean, Jung is an extremely talented grappler. That's probably the most underrated part of his game that people, you know, they always see the crazy slugfests he gets into, the Korean zombie nickname because he just takes punishment and keeps moving forward. But really, if you go back, I mean, the base of his game is the canvas. I mean, that's where he gets some just amazing submissions. Obviously, he's had the twister, but I mean, just great scrambles. He out-scrambled Dustin Poirier in that incredible back-and-forth battle where they headlined. So if this guy can get it to the floor, or if Bermudez takes him down and leaves, you know, even a little bit of space, then I can see Jung getting something going. I can also see Jung connecting with the heavy shot and hurting Bermudez and maybe setting up a finish there. That being said, just 3.5 years, man, that is so long, and it is just a little too much for me to really take stock in and believe in, even if he has been training a lot. I mean, there's just only so much that just training can do. You have to be fighting, too. And Dennis Bermudez has definitely been fighting, and he's still fighting at an elite level. So I think that at some point, Bermudez might just grind Jung out, whether it's with his relentless pace on the feet or definitely with his takedowns. I think he can just really beat Jung up and wear him down. So I'm rooting for Jung. He's always going to be one of my favorite fighters, but I think this is a bit too much for his first fight back. I think he definitely could have used a tune-up fight instead of a main event. But I do expect this fight to be very entertaining as long as it lasts, but my pick is going to be Dennis Bermudez. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 104. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at @MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dumb Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.